Today's episode is brought to you by Solo New York, one of the biggest bag brands in the company. They started in 2008 with a commitment to shake up a boring industry and make cool, thoughtfully designed bags to keep everyone moving in style. I've got their Varsity All-Star Backpack Duffel, which is an ultra-lightweight backpack that transforms into a duffel. It's got handle on top, on the side. You can change it into a backpack. Amazing for going to the gym. It's got a compartment for shoes. I can actually fit my basketball shoes in there. And just the quality is really what I'm most impressed by. The zippers move incredibly quickly. There's no chance of them ever getting stuck on some fabric or anything like that. The pull handles are high quality. You can tell they're not going to break off. It's really just a great bag. The way to get started with them, solo-ny.com/capspace. These are no slash capspace. We talk about all the time here on the program. They've got hundreds of designs, and you can get 25% off your order at solo-ny.com/capspace. Use that slash capspace URL to let them know that you came from us. Oh, man, we had something else planned for today, but that's out the window now. Kawhi Leonard traded to the Toronto Raptors, along with Danny Green, for Jakob Poeltl, DeMar DeRozan, top 20 protected 2019 first-round pick. Holy crap, man.
Also, he was traded with Danny Green. I mean, that's an important
part. Oh, did I not even include Danny Green? I'm just so shell-shocked right now that I couldn't even say the trade properly.
I mean, this is absolutely massive, and we don't know what Kawhi Leonard we're getting. And of course, there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen on that point. But I think I want to start with this from the perspective of just how absolutely fascinating this Raptors team is. I mean, even with the, so we'll treat Kawhi fairly as we should as an unknown. But now you have Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard in whatever form he's in. OG Anunoby. Yeah, that's right. He's not in this deal. He's still on this run. Raptors. Serge Ibaka, Valanciunas, presumably they can get a backup center. They still have Fred VanVleet, all these other pieces. And that's a really, really interesting team. I don't think, like, off a quick blush that they're necessarily, like, better than the Celtics, but they're really interesting. And if Kawhi Leonard can be a top 20, top 30 player, they step up to a whole different level.
Well, and I mean, that is the question. We'll talk more about his health, but I want to just assume that he's going to be close to the same guy again. And if so, you know, I'd have to think about it very seriously. And man, Nick Nurse is going to have an interesting challenge. Welcome to the NBA, Nick Nurse. You just got a guy that you have to sell on your organization 1 year who in theory doesn't want to be there. But, and we'll get to the whole thing from Kawhi's perspective too. But I mean, just think about this closing lineup. Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, another guy who we don't know where he's at performance-wise. He struggled with injuries last year. OG Anunoby, Kawhi Leonard, and then either Pascal Siakam or Serge Ibaka at center. I mean, that is going to be just impossible to score against. Now, you can switch just about everything. I mean, Kyle Lowry is still a pretty good switch defender, you know, similar to Chris Paul in terms of just having that low center of gravity. They can fly all over the floor. There's really nobody in the East that, like, you're worried about posting you up that much. I guess Joel Embiid would be the only one. They have, probably enough shooting, and they have that one guy in Kawhi who is really unstoppable one-on-one, again, if healthy, whereas DeRozan was a guy who could be shut down by the best defenders. I mean, even when Kawhi would go against Golden State, he was able to score one-on-one against some of their best guys. So I think that would just be such a nasty team. And then you think of the depth that they still have with Wright. They brought back Van Vliet as well, CJ Miles, Norm Powell. I mean, maybe there could still be a place for him on the bench unit now. Siakam, Jonas Valanciunas is still a solid enough starting center who could maybe still play at the end of games in some matchups. I mean, that is just a really nasty team. I mean, especially defensively, like, this, that should be a team that is, I mean, you know, maybe the departure of Casey will hurt the defense, and the departure of Kalamian, but I mean, just based on personnel, I mean, that's going to be a really, really good defense.
And also worth noting that their biggest weakness in terms of regular season depth is probably at center. That's the easiest position to add depth. They could even just bring back Bebe Noguera. And while I really like Jakob Poeltl, still do now, will for a while, the margin between him in this kind of nascent stage still in his career and the backup centers that are still on the market is significant, but it's not that significant for a team that has all these other players on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, Poeltl, especially because now they're probably going to be doing so much switching. wouldn't necessarily have been in the closing lineup to begin with. And he is someone who probably would have matured into a solid enough starting center. He's a loss, but you know, not someone who's just going to kill you because he's not on your team anymore. I mean, they only have 10 guys really under contract right now. They are said to have agreed with Lorenzo Brown. Don't know what the guarantees are on that. So that'll put you at 11. They moved on from Malcolm Miller. I think Alfonso McKinney guarantees in a couple of days. You imagine they probably would move on.
Oh, he did waived. Get waived.
Okay, take him off my sheet right now. So they're at 11 guys. The tax bill is looking like it's going to be pretty big if they fill out the roster with minimums. And remember, they haven't even used their taxpayer MLE either, by the way. So they have that available. But let's say they just fill out to 14 players with minimums and don't look to cut any tax. They're looking at a $44 million tax payment and overall team salary plus tax of $188 million. You imagine that they probably will, in fact, be trying to cut. But with and Malachi Richardson, you would think he would be someone they would move on for. He only makes 1.5, so you replace him with someone else and you're not really saving any money. And Powell is the obvious candidate, making $9 million this year, but let's not forget he's got four more years at $42 million, a player option on that last year. So you probably would have to attach a first round pick to him to move him. I'm not saying he's not a valuable player if he's going right, but still it's looking like he's overpaid, didn't play at all last year. So it is going to be tough to cut money. There's always the thought that they could move on for Valanciunas as well, who's got $16 million this year, a $17.6 million player option that he likely picks up for next year. So that could be the other one, but they kind of need Valanciunas unless they want to just make Ibaka their starting center and just bring in someone else on a budget. But I think at this point, you know, you probably want to just start the season with this team and then kind of see where you're at around the trade deadline, you know, unless cap space from the Hawks and Kings is just going to go away between now and then, which is possible. So we'll see. Some moves are going to be coming. A $44 million tax payment for a team that's never paid the tax before seems unlikely, but man, I mean, this is just, I think really we have to turn now to the question of Kawhi's health. I mean, that's really the next step here, and then also just his, where he's at mentally as far as going to play for this team for a year, which was not among his preferred destinations by all accounts.
Right. And so, of course, people will be looking to the physical that Kawhi Leonard does have to take and where, you know, what the Raptors are looking for in that physical. We know very little about his status and his recovery. There was those inklings from Shams Charania a little while ago that, oh, he's, you know, on the way to coming back. I don't remember the exact terminology. Well,
and Woj had that article about how he might play at the Team USA minicamp.
That's right.
So, I mean, if they're talking about doing that, then you have to imagine he's healthy enough to be out there on the court. But as many executives anonymously noted in Woj's piece, that wouldn't have been enough to show, all right, is he a top 20 player? Is he top 5 player? But he could at least show that he's like out there and moving around and looks okay.
Right. And so that's a threshold question that now is more pertinent for the Raptors in a couple of different ways. But yeah, I mean, we don't know what Kawhi Leonard the Raptors are getting. And also, it's at the beginning of this, as assuming that the physicals go to pass and Kawhi ends up a member of the Raptors and shows up, which I'm not as worried. There are people in my mentions, because I was awake when the early reporting on this happened, like, what if he doesn't show up? He's going to show up because the incentives, the NBA structures this, so guys basically have to. I mean, the no-shows are punished enough that it doesn't happen.
Well, and so to push back on that a little bit, absolutely. I mean, he's going to show up. He's going to take his physical, blah, blah, blah. Like, he'd do all that. But, you know, what level of malingering might there be? But on the other hand,
sure,
he has a couple of reasons. Number one, if he wants to get that big free agent contract next year, he needs to play and play well and make it through the season not injured and show that he's still a max player. And number two, obviously, you know, this, if it's about getting to the Lakers, I mean, so he wants the Raptors to trade him again. Well, the Lakers weren't willing to give up enough of a package to get him from San Antonio initially. So why is that going to change later on here? I mean, maybe, you know, the Spurs weren't interested in Lonzo Ball and the Raptors would be if all this goes really badly, but it seems like just, now, Kawhi has done a lot of things that may not have been in his best interest here, but it seems pretty clear to me that the best way to get what he wants ultimately in terms of a big contract and his ability to pick his destination in 2019, whether that's the Lakers or elsewhere, is have a great season with the Raptors this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, this trade makes it so that, assuming it goes through, that Kawhi cannot receive the Supermax. You know, that he'll have to wait for his 10 years of experience. Whether that affects the structure of his next free agent contract, whether he just says, with all this injury stuff, hey, I'll take the 30% max for as long as I can get it, and then we'll figure out if I'm worth the 35% max at that point. That's significant as well in terms of his financial present, financial future. And, I mean, what the Raptors are getting from him, but it is super important. Because Kawhi Leonard, I brought up this point when we talked about him the last time on the show, that per minute, I think he was the best player in the NBA in the 2016-17 regular season. The reason he finished fourth in my MVP voting was because he played fewer minutes, and value is, you know, player quality, player impact factored in with the time they play. And that Kawhi Leonard was awesome. Even if he's not quite that guy, he's still an absolutely incredible player.
Yes. So, I mean, this Raptors team, clearly, I mean, you got to have them above Philly here, clearly. I mean, unless Kawhi is just a complete shell. And then Boston, you know, we just don't know what that Boston team is going to look like. They certainly just have armloads of talent. I think that this trade, I mean, he's such an unbelievable two-way player when he's healthy. Also worth noting, Kawhi, 15% trade bonus, I doubt he's going to waive it, and the trade works even with it. So that's going to bump him from $20.1 million to $23.1 million. He's still really no chance that he extends. He could only get 4 years, and he could only get 120% of this last year salary. His max contract next year would start at 32.7, and of course, you know, he wants to get to free agency. Almost zero chance you would think that he extends here, although he would be eligible to do so up until June 30th, actually, although there's effectively no reason to extend. He's got that player option for next year as well, which does not increase based on the trade bonus. That would bump him back down to $21.3 million, but in case, you know, he suffers some sort of an injury, he could always opt into that next year and try again in 2020. What do you think the chances are he actually stays in Toronto after this year?
Low, but not zero. I mean, the Raptors are a competitive team. This is not going to a, like, low lottery franchise or something like that. And maybe he likes it. Maybe the feel of Toronto, you know, a city that I haven't actually spent any time in, but a lot of people I know have and really enjoy. And you see that with DeRozan, was drafted there, and he's crushed to leave there. And so maybe he finds a really nice fit there. I would say it's unlikely, just because there are so many teams that are going to have cap space and that can woo him. And the fifth year could be helpful. But then the other thing we could note is that since Toronto can trade him 2 months after this, you know, maybe they even move him before the end of this upcoming season. So you have to factor that in as well. And then they, of course, wouldn't have the fifth year. They wouldn't get him at that point. So I would say low, but not zero.
Yeah, maybe it's a little higher, although it is worth noting that after this season, he'll have 8 years of experience, and especially guys on his level, and especially if he plays really well, he probably would want to be in a situation much like Gordon Hayward, although Hayward wasn't as good as Kawhi, where he could become a free agent again pretty soon after he gets the 10 plus years of experience and get that 35% of the salary cap contract. So he might want to go for, let's say, a 3+1, maybe even a 2+1. Again, we'll see how healthy he is and how much the long-term security is important to him. But with all the teams that have cap space, clearly, you know, even if he's probably only playing at like a top 15 type of level, he's going to have many, many max offers out there. I mean, let's look at what the Raptors gave up here. DeRozan, Poeltl, that 2019 top 20 projected pick, which is a good bit of negotiating for Ujiri, that if this goes really wrong, you know, they're not gonna have to give that up. We'll have to see what the protections are going forward. That has not been reported yet, but we figured we should just record right now.
Actually, it has been.
What is it?
Yeah, so that pick is not protected going forward, because if it doesn't convey in the top 20, it becomes 2 second round picks.
Okay, well, that is a good bit of negotiating.
It's sort of like the Jerry and Grant trade with the Oklahoma City Thunder, except that was years out ahead, and because of the Enes Kanter thing and everything else, that was more complicated.
Yeah, Jeremy,
they're all the same, same family, they all count. But yeah, so that's another interesting piece. This, so there's some downside protection for the Toronto Raptors. I mean, you could make an argument that this team is really well situated with decent health for the regular season anyway, because because they have all this talent. I mean, last year they ended up with the best record in the East. It was funny. I was thinking, putting their season in perspective. I'm like, yeah, they did finish with the best record in the East last year, even though it ended pretty badly. And there was a lot of kind of help, you know, the Celtics getting hurt as much as they did and them punching over their weight. But I mean, defensively, they have a ton of talent now. But yeah, so let's think about this. So you and I are both lower on DeMar DeRozan than a vast majority of people. Still an unquestionably talented player, somebody that we both, I think, considered for All-NBA with the impact he had on the Raptors this past year. And his contract, for those that are still kind of in that framework, which I think is important here, he has a flat $27.7 million for the 18-19 season, 19-20 season, then has a player option for that identical value in 2020-21. So that is, you know, that's a lot of money. It is not an obscene amount of money. And DeRozan, you know, I would say, would you classify him at this point as being prime, kind of post-prime?
Well, yeah, I mean, he just had the best season of his career, I think. You know, the shooting threes is helpful, you know, that he's added that to his game, although they don't really seem to care about that.
And this will be his age 29 season.
Yeah, and so 2 years left after this, as you mentioned, it at the $27 million per. You know, it was said in theory by some commentators that it's an appeal of this deal to get off of his money. I don't really think so, because even next year, if Kawhi were to leave, they wouldn't have any kind of cap space. And then 2020-21, they basically have nothing on the books other than Norm Powell and Anunoby. So they might have, he would have had a player option that year for $27 million. He probably either opts out, or, you know, if he sticks around, I mean, you still have massive flexibility there. You could maybe get something for him in trade or whatever. I mean, I don't think that that was a particularly bad component. You know, maybe that turns into a bad contract by the end, probably does. But I don't see moving on from DeRozan as like an advantage that he was some sort of an albatross. And Proto, we mentioned him, you know, I think he could turn into a solid starting center. We've liked a lot of the things that he's done, although he hasn't really been able to perform as well in the playoffs. So I think what, in terms of what they gave up for the Raptors, you know, the opportunity cost maybe is, you know, Kawhi doesn't play well, Danny Green doesn't play well, and, you know, maybe you're a little bit worse this year, but like I said, I don't think that they'll be that much worse without DeRozan. If they can just get something out of Green and Leonard this year, obviously if Leonard just doesn't play and Green is cooked because he's just had too many nagging injuries, then that changes. But they were unlikely to get to 59 wins again, I think, this year anyway. Seemed like they're over their head, and obviously they had run into massive walls in the playoffs with the departure of LeBron from the conference. This would be even more awesome if LeBron were still in the East, by the way, this trade. And I should say that.
Oh,
I should
man.
Say that because you have Kawhi able to guard him now. I should say this too. I'm really happy this trade happened. Like, this is, to me, the most interesting destination for Kawhi of any of the places that was being talked about, at least for this year.
Well, I would have said Philly for me. I think Philly would have been really, you know, because then you think of the pieces of the way that fits together. But theoretically, if Covington had been in the deal, then that would have affected their upside. It would have been more kind of more disappointing if Kawhi left than it would be in this circumstance. But yeah, I mean, they're certainly in that conversation because this Raptors team is absolutely fascinating. I mean, that I think that might be the underappreciated part of this. I mean, we have to talk about DeRozan and the Spurs and everything else, is that the Raptors are now on the short list of the most interesting teams in the NBA.
Let's talk about where the Raptors are in terms of adding some talent to this team in theory. I mean, maybe that's just not going to happen, but they do have to fill out at least with minimums. Anybody left on the market here that you might be targeting? Were you them?
I mean, one of the things they need is a backup center. There are a lot of guys that kind of fit that bill, whether you want to talk about David West or Bebe Noguera coming back, Alex Len, Greg Monroe. I would go with somebody a little bit more versatile. They could also theoretically throw an offer sheet at Montrezl Harrell using the mid-level. I doubt that, but if we're going in the minimums, then on the perimeter, they could, you know, they could talk to Connaughton, Brewer, Nwaba. They don't really need point guard depth, especially now that they kept FEV and DeLon Wright. So I would be focusing more on those directions.
You know who I actually...
Maybe Vince Carter?
You know who I actually think... There's a couple guys I think would be good fits. One would be Noah Vonleh, especially if they're going to be doing more switching. You know, he could fit into that. And then I actually think they could use one more scorer on this team now. I mean, they've got a lot of these long wing guys who are versatile, who can defend. But I mean, really, Kawhi and Lowry... are the only guys that really are capable of going one-on-one, and Lowry really has kind of gotten past it. So I actually think Mike Beasley is someone that I might target if I were them, to get one more guy who can fill it up on that second unit. We might hear Jamal Crawford's name as well. I don't like that one quite as much. You mentioned Nwaba. That's an interesting one, although he's kind of redundant with some of the guys they have. Connaughton as a shooter, they could use a little bit more shooting as well, I would say. Actually, you know what? Someone else whose name you might hear is Joe Johnson. That might be one where, as a regular season guy, to maybe, but that does kind of take away from the identity of that, like, run it down your throat and defend second unit, to have kind of like an old guy or a offense only guy like a Beasley or a Johnson in there. But those are guys to think about. I mean, they have a ton of depth at point guard. I mean, another thing they might consider too is, would they want to look at trading right now? They've got Van Vliet back in the fold. Maybe they could trade right and get something pretty good. If there's a team, Wright's going to be a restricted free agent next summer. They probably won't have the money to pay him if Kawhi were to come back. So maybe what they could do is try and trade him for a big of equivalent talent. I mean, there's probably a lot of teams that would want to trade. You could get a younger big as well. Maybe someone who could be the Valanciunas replacement eventually, now that they've kind of lost that guy. They could always maybe bring back Bebe too on a minimum deal. They obviously didn't give him a qualifying offer, but he appears to have gotten little interest. Bebe could be another guy who would help them during the regular season, although he doesn't really have the intelligence level to play very well in the postseason. Anything else to talk about from the Raptors side of things here? I mean, this could be like a 60-win team, like, very easily. I mean, they won 59 last year, but it could be like a 60-win team that actually plays. And also, I mean, if you want to look at the other conference, like, very, very well set up to defend Golden State as well. I mean, I don't know if they might just not quite be able to score well enough against Golden State, but man, I mean, look at all the guys that they have. I mean, they got Danny Green to guard Steph or Klay Thompson, the amount of switching they could do. Kawhi obviously is about as good as it gets for defending KD. I mean, this could be a team that, you know, for a long time we've talked about the Raptors punching below their weight in the postseason. I think this is a team that actually could punch above their weight in the postseason, especially if there's just not many teams that could have a rotation with this many good defenders who can all switch.
A couple other points I want to bring up from the Raptors' perspective. One, this also takes away from their reliance in the playoffs on Kyle Lowry. If Kawhi Leonard can be anything close offensively to what he was in 16-17, because, you know, that they've risen and fallen a lot with Lowry's effectiveness and ineffectiveness. And I mean, yeah, they did run up against LeBron James, basically.
Lowry actually played pretty well offensively in the playoffs last year, quietly, with them getting smoked, obviously. Yeah. But their defense was the big problem in that Cleveland series.
Right, and they certainly have more there. We don't know what we're getting from Danny Green beyond the fact that he probably missed more games over the last couple of years because he was on the Spurs. I mean, so 79 3 years ago, 68 last year, 70 in 17-18. So sorry, I had the years a little bit off. But there were times where he looked a little bit past. This will be his age 31 season. I think he just turned 31 in the offseason. And they won't need him to do a lot of shot creation, which is always good with Danny Green. They should have that from other guys, and if they can just allow him to be active defensively. But taking him out of the Spurs defensive goo, I think that's one of the angles that we'll talk about with San Antonio as well, is how all this fits in. But the other thing I wanted to talk with you about on this, and this is as a way of framing this deal in terms of how favorable I think it is for the Toronto Raptors, as invaluable, you know, in terms of the fabric of the franchise as DeRozan was, is how broken would Kawhi Leonard have to be for you to reject this deal when you think about how it cleans up their finances. And yeah, you're right that there isn't as much of an opportunity cost with DeRozan, because it's not like they would have cleared cap space. They're not clearing cap space for the 2019 offseason. They're just clearing kind of wiggle room under the tax. But where would you be looking at this if you're the Raptors? Because all you gave up is that, you know, corresponding salary in DeRozan and a very good player, obviously, Jakob Poeltl and a top 20 protected first round pick.
Yeah, we've talked about how inscrutable this injury may be for Kawhi, right? That even if he looks like he can move around and he's healthy. I mean, he was out there playing, didn't suffer anything really acute, you know, just kind of wasn't getting better, but he's out there playing at, you know, not at an amazing level, but still at an effective level in those 9 games that he did play. You know, I think there are some issues with recovery as well. And you know, just in terms of a physical, I mean, generally in a physical, you're not going to have the guy like sprinting up and down the floor. You know, it's just like a doctor taking imaging and like doing a bunch of tests. And so are you really going to be able to test recovery? Are you going to be able to test this is a chronic condition, whether this is going to pop back up in November? So I think it's pretty unlikely that you're going to discover something in a physical, even if he's like, yeah, you know, I'm still getting some pain, or I don't know, like you palpated and it still doesn't feel right. So I mean, I'm not sure exactly what the procedure would be to even test where he's at. You know, maybe you test the strength in both legs and the strength in the bad quad is like a lot worse or something. But you know, especially now DeRozan was supposedly assured that he wouldn't be traded and at Summer League and then was traded, and he's upset about that, so you've got that angle as well. So can you even really bring him back? Probably not. So I think I mean, he would have to be like, the doctor would have to be like, yeah man, he's not even going to play at all this season at this point, for me to be like, all right, we're going to in this trade. I mean, even getting Danny Green is valuable, and you know, maybe if DeRozan, here's the other thing too, I mean, if you're Toronto, like who else wants DeRozan, right? Like that was, we've struggled before to think about like, hey, you know, where is the destination that's willing to give up value for DeMar DeRozan? So who knows? I mean, I think unless the doctor is just like, this guy isn't going to play at all this season, I think you go ahead and do this deal. It's just the upside of the move is so high, even just for this 1 year. And good to see some talent back in the East and those East playoffs. I mean, a Toronto-Boston matchup with Kawhi at anything close to full strength is going to be awesome.
Yeah, and I think a Toronto-Philly matchup would be absolutely fascinating as well. I mean, you have a team that's maybe going small at center against Joel Embiid, Kawhi Leonard's defensive potential against Ben Simmons. I mean, if you want to do one-on-one.
Kawhi would just put Simmons on lock if he was healthy.
Yeah, it would. And I mean, having Danny Green out there to basically take Redick maybe off the floor, if he can do that. I mean, it'd be so much fun. I mean, the series, there's some series out there now that are really, really interesting. And as you said, yeah, the Raptors now are a fascinating team with a new head coach who is a part of their staff. How does that affect their identity on both ends of the floor? Does it affect their willingness to go to more modern lineups in the playoffs? You know, they're going to have to now, and they have the personnel to now. So I'm excited to see all of that from their perspective. And we'll talk about this a little bit in San Antonio, but I want to mention this with Thron. You and I both like Jakob Poeltl. I think that he can be a solid to above average starting center. Above average, you know, top 15 would be a big step for him. I mean, there are a lot of good centers. We just saw this draft class. We'll talk about it more in the Summer League recap too. But I don't see Jakob Poeltl as a guy who trading him, you know, it really haunts you, because there are a lot of good centers. There are a lot of capable centers. And I don't see that, like, you know, top five, top 10, all NBA potential with him. And those are really the guys that haunt you at a young age. So I think there are a lot of situations I think they would love to have him this year. But that real, you know, like what happened, let's say, with Victor Oladipo, like, you know, where he just became this linchpin of a really successful team.
I will say that in preparing for the podcast we thought we were going to do today, which is our regrading of the 2017 offseason, we were quite confident that Victor Oladipo would not come back to haunt anyone, and that turned out not to be the case. But nonetheless, yeah.
Poeltl not having the ball in his hands as much makes that
I mean, Oladipo, you could understand how, at least maybe how he could get there with his physical potential. Poeltl, you know, doesn't really have that, to be sure. The next place I want to go here, and we'll get to the Spurs, but like how they're going to look on the court this year is frankly the least interesting part of this to me now. But what about the value that San Antonio got here, given the fact that Woj was reporting that the Blazers wouldn't include Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum, that and this is all because of the 1 year rental and obviously the health thing as well, that the Sixers did not include Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, or even Markelle Fultz. Boston did not include Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward. They were supposedly offering the Celtics and Sixers pick heavy packages. Now, if the Celtics pick heavy package included that Kings pick, then maybe that changes things. And then obviously the Lakers, you know, were supposedly Brandon Ingram wasn't in the deal yet as well. You know, who knows whether he ever would have been or not. So between the packages that were being offered, or maybe just holding on to Leonard and forcing him to report and play this year, you know, if you could do that, even, you know, that's obviously fraught with peril as well. Just keeping him and letting him walk completely just to be good again this year, or this package, or just trying to hold out for a better package later on. What do you think of those options, like, where does this rank for you from the Spurs' perspective?
Personally, I cannot extricate this from the question of what the Spurs are now, because they made a specific tactical choice to build a strong team.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we do, at least we on do paper, have to talk about that now.
For the 1920 season, or for the 1819 season and the 1920 season. And so San Antonio, that was a part of this, you know, the pick heavy deals. We don't know what picks those were. Philly also now has the Miami 2021 first, and that is, you know, a valuable piece. We don't know exactly where it's going to fit in terms of the age limit and everything else like that, but I don't think that DeRozan, you know, I don't like where the Spurs team is relative to what I consider success. They could certainly make the playoffs. You know, we saw last year without Kawhi Leonard that they made the playoffs. They were a wonderful defensive team, which was such an accomplishment for Greg Popovich. I had him as my coach of the year until the very last ballot because of what Brad Stevens pulled off after Kyrie got hurt. And San Antonio certainly has the tools for that. But if you're trying to say, okay, what are the chances that this team wins a playoff series as they're presently constituted, or, you know, kind of the way that we'd expect, I would have that pretty low. You know, I don't think that they're better than the Warriors, the Rockets, probably OKC. I mean, the Lakers are this weird kind of patchwork of everything else, but, you know, the San Antonio, they basically, this fits in with what they were before, which is a regular season team that, due to their amazing execution, the great coaching, they can punch over their weight in the regular season, and then they get knocked out. It's kind of in a way like what the Raptors have been, just because of the players that they had and the way it all fits together. And I can understand why an ownership group, especially when you have a coach that you don't know how long he's going to be your head coach, that, and one of the all-time greats, if not the greatest NBA head coach of all time in Greg Popovich, I can understand why you want to kind of have that security blanket of, oh, we're going to be good right now. But me, as a pragmatist, as somebody who likes championship ceilings, who likes going at it, I don't love this package.
Yeah, and we'll never know just exactly how fractured that relationship was. By all accounts, it was pretty bad. Whether they could have just made him play this year or not, and just, you know, been good this year, and then you let him walk. But I mean, but basically, you know, if that were even the remotest option, you're looking at essentially trading for Jakob Poeltl, 2 years left on his rookie deal, top 20 protected first rounder, so we know that's not gonna be amazing. And then 1 year, possibly two, with the player option, although if he opts into that player option, it's probably because he's not really that good anymore, of DeRozan, beyond what you would have had for Kawhi. This, to me, I wouldn't say unquestionably makes them worse this year, because you don't know about Kawhi's health, and maybe, you know, they were really skeptical about his health. You know, that could be part of it, although supposedly they didn't really know that much about his condition. And people were saying the Sixers knew more because their doctor was treating him, although I that seems kind of overblown to me, because, you know, that would be a violation of Kawhi's confidentiality, even if the Sixers doctor is treating him. But maybe there were ways that they figured out to get around that. If it were me, I would have probably continued to try to hold off and play hardball. You know, getting DeRozan, the DeRozan LaMarcus Aldridge ISO ball extravaganza, express to maybe 51 wins with the great coaching of Pop, losing the first round in the West almost certainly, unless they get a really good matchup. That doesn't do a lot for me, but really that this sticks with where the Spurs have been since that 2015 offseason. Very low ceiling moves just to kind of stay around, you know, almost like, hey, we can't get worse, as opposed to, hey, let's really try and get better. And so, yeah, you know, they'll have a team that's not going to suck for the next couple of years. This will be, you know, I'm very fascinated to see, what does Kawhi look like outside of San Antonio? What does Danny Green look like outside of San Antonio? And then what does DeRozan look like having to play in the West playoffs now when he hasn't been that effective in the East playoffs? And, you know, what can Pop get out of him? What can Pop get out of him defensively? It's going to be fascinating. I mean, this is going to have to be another Pop wizardry defensive coaching performance here to get them to up to the same levels that they were last year. Yeah.
A quick note on that. You talked about DeRozan with the East and the West playoffs. I mean, think about all the perimeter defenders that are in the West. I mean, you have Paul George on the Thunder, a team they could very well play. You have, you know, Utah has this interesting compilation of guys. The Warriors have, you know, Kevin Durant and Andre Iguodala. It's absolutely fascinating to think about. I mean, theoretically, we could get a Jimmy Butler, DeMar DeRozan series, depending on how the Wolves fit into all this.
Yeah, it's not that fascinating for me, because I just think he's not going to be able to score on those guys.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll see. Maybe there'll be some growth for DeRozan, but as you mentioned, age 29, probably on the downside a little bit this season.
Well, and that gets into something that I want to see. I mentioned this a little bit before, but how does being on the Spurs affect DeRozan's game on both ends of the floor? Does he become, like, do they get him in a little bit of a different mode defensively? I thought he showed a little bit of improvement last year, and that was a part of why the Raptors exceeded our expectations on that end. Dwayne Casey's teams actually, I think, broadly did that throughout his Toronto tenure, but maybe the Spurs can get a little bit more out of him there. And then we saw more 3-point shooting from DeMar DeRozan. I do think that was a little bit overwrought in terms of, you know, it was more than he was shooting before, but it still wasn't like, oh, he's DeMar DeRozan, he's shooting a lot of threes or anything like that. But do we see a different DeMar DeRozan? And so in certain ways, I think this is a parallel to what we saw when, and obviously I'm not comparing the players, but with Wiggins on Jimmy Butler, when they added Jimmy Butler, which is, okay, you're in a situation now where we can get a really good sense of what parts of you are immutable and what parts of you are a little bit fungible. And I am genuinely excited to see that with DeRozan.
So the other perspective on this here is these other teams that did not get Kawhi, specifically Philly and the Lakers, or even, you know, a Portland, if they would have rather had CJ McCollum than DeMar DeRozan, which is not impossible to me. Did those teams blow it? And I think Philly and the Lakers is probably who you would want to focus on here, because those are the places where it was the Lakers. He really wanted to be Philly. There was some talk, then there was some pushback, like, oh, maybe you'd want to play there long term, maybe you wouldn't. But did those teams blow it by not offering more, right? Like, Philly never offered Markel Fultz. Lakers probably never offered Brandon Ingram. Who knows whether that gets the deal done, and what other pieces would have been required. Obviously, if the Spurs were focused on competing this year, you know, this DeRozan package is probably better than anything Philly or the Lakers realistically could have offered. So maybe it just, if that's really what the Spurs wanted, you know, it just wasn't going to work, unless it was just like the absolute kitchen sink, you know. And if it was Ingram and it was a bunch of firsts in the future and they wanted Kuzma and, you know, Lonzo Ball would have had to go to a 13 to get, you know, I mean, so, but let's just assume that from the Lakers, you could have got it done. And this might be a wrong assumption, but let's assume for the Lakers, you could have got it done if you'd put in Ingram and some reasonable other assets, and for Philly you could have got it done if you'd put in Markel Fultz and then, you know, that 2021 pick and some matching salary going back to me, like Covington or and Šarić or something like that. Did those teams blow it by not trading for him?
So I don't think that the Lakers blew it because of the prospect that they've, since they maintained this cap space. I mean, it was always an uncertainty. I mean, we saw this with Dwight Howard, that if they acquire Kawhi, that it necessarily would have worked. I mean, LeBron is not the easiest guy to play with, especially for players who like to have the ball in their hands, which Kawhi Leonard might. Yeah. I mean, we'll have to kind of see what he wants in his game.
And we've heard conflicting things too on whether Kawhi wants to play with LeBron or not. Most of it towards that he still wants to be a Laker, but, you know, some indication that he gets out.
It's interesting that it seems like most of that is he wants to be a Laker, than other parts that he might not want to play with LeBron, which aren't necessarily conflicting. they are conflicting in terms of, because LeBron James is going to be a member of the Lakers, and if you force them to make that choice, they're going to choose LeBron James.
Yeah. Well. From the Lakers' perspective is that, you know, even if they got Kawhi this year, they're probably not even, you know, projected to be better to me than Houston or Golden State. Maybe Houston, depending on how much they fall off.
Yeah, they'd be more in that, like, one injury away type of conversation, where it's like they wouldn't be favored, but there are circumstances that could happen to make them competitive in those series.
Yeah.
And remember, they would have had to fill that roster. There would have been a lot of kind of blank spaces on that roster, depending on who got included in the trade, guys like Josh Hart and everything else like that. They would have had to lose a KCP in all likelihood, and then, you know, he's a nice little depth piece, would have fit in well with those guys.
Yeah, they also could have done just get Kawhi on the team now, and then if we're really going well and Kawhi looks great and he's going to stick around, we can make some more trades to get some more pieces that might have gotten them there.
Yeah, they could have used some of the young guys there. They absolutely could have done that. That was, you know, an element to a point of what Cleveland did once they got LeBron back in 2014, was trading some of those young guys once they got him in the fold. And with Kawhi, I think you'd want to wait a little longer just to see how he was physically. But also, because of the perspective from the Lakers, that cap space is important, because let's say Kawhi didn't work out for whatever reason, then in this circumstance, they can go after someone else. If Kawhi doesn't want to be a Laker, so be it. They can get somebody else. That could be Clay. It could be Kyrie. It could be
Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. Any number of guys. They could get somebody by trade. They still have all these young players. As long as those guys look good this year, they can still move all them. So I think the Lakers are in a good place for Kawhi or someone else. Philly is tough because they still could get Kawhi. I mean, if he doesn't want to play with LeBron, I think they are the best option, though the idea of getting the ball in their hands is not really going to be helped a ton by being in Philly because they have Joel Embiid and, of course, Ben Simmons, and it sounds like they want those guys to have that opportunity. But for Philly, it's kind of the question about, well, what offer would have been good enough? I dealt with this a little bit. We did the SBC exercise, and I was mentoring the Celtics team, but I was thinking a lot about the Sixers and what they should include and what they shouldn't include. And a lot of that depends on what San Antonio wanted. And I mean, if when you think about a team that took an offer built around DeMar DeRozan and a deeply protected first-round pick, yeah, maybe Fultz has enough cachet to make it work, but maybe they just, you know, a deal with Covington and Šarić just didn't have enough present viability for the Spurs to be interested in that, you know, if it was just so mismatched in terms of the evaluation of talent that you would have had to add in so much to make it palatable for the Spurs that it becomes a bad deal for you. And I think that's very possible with what San Antonio appear to be valuing in terms of a return.
To me, in the scenario that I set up, you know, assuming that you could find out through back channels that Kawhi was relatively healthy and that there was some indication in the case of Philly that he might want to stay. Now, of course, Philly will have the cap space to go after him next summer as well now. But, you know, Fultz, who knows how well his jumper is coming along. Bodner was talking about this on his pod the other day that, you know, we haven't seen any like video of him shooting yet or anything. Like usually if it's good, they would probably be sending that out. If we don't see that by August or September, it might be a concern. But just with how messed up the jumper was, I still maintain it's going to be something that's going to affect his career and his upside. I don't think he's ever going to quite be the same. You'd think maybe Drew Hanlon is that much of a miracle worker. But I think I would have just done it. And same thing with Brandon Ingram. Like he's has a bright future, but you know, we've talked about him as being a little lower on him than some. You know, I don't see him as a guy who's going to be, you know, better than the second best player on a really good team, and that's to me is the ceiling. Maybe gets a little bit beyond that if he improves his strength and athleticism, but so I shouldn't say ceiling. I think that's like, you know, a higher end outcome for him would be a more accurate way of saying it. But yeah, it's I think I would have grit my teeth and just put Fultz or Ingram in the deal. I just don't think that those guys, I mean, we're talking about Kawhi Leonard. Like there's just so much ability, and if Kawhi hits, you know, I mean, you could look at Kawhi almost as like a draft pick himself at this point, you know, I mean, you don't know, but a draft pick that, you know, has absolute superstar top five player upside, whereas you just don't know that Ingram and Fultz have that, especially in the case of Fultz with the jumper concerns that we've seen. And again, we don't know that would have been enough to get it done for the Spurs or what else would have had to be in the deal. But if it was just, hey, you know what, like the package is largely built around Fultz or Ingram, I think I probably would have done it just because I just think Kawhi is that good, even with the health concern.
What would be the margin between Kawhi and those other players we talked about is significant here. I mean, Kawhi Leonard is the only player of that group that we've ever seriously talked about as being an MVP caliber guy. And even if there is no guarantee, and there is no guarantee that he will ever get back, those players are ludicrously valuable. And Kawhi is on, you know, if we can assume he gets back to any, in terms of age-related regression, he's on the plus side. I mean, this is a guy who might not ever have a better year than the one he had, but he could be pretty damn close to it. That is special. And so, yeah, what I was saying with the Sixers is more just about the Spurs valuation. I would have gritted my teeth and included Fultz, even though I love what his upside could be, because that is far from a certainty as well. And you brought up Ingram, exact same thing, you know, ceiling is not certainty. And that's true for all of the players involved in this. And I think Philly is the one that could rue the day the most on this, if assuming that the two sides were even relatively close enough to come to a deal. And, you know, with the Lakers, it's a little bit more complicated because they can still get him. And I think that's why I'm a little bit more positive on this, is that if they feel that confidence, and if Kawhi chooses not to go there as a free agent, that means it probably wouldn't have been a good idea to trade for him in the first place to give up those kind of assets. And
yeah, so I don't know. I mean, that's not what people think about Paul George at this point, right? They think that he might want to say that. But yeah, I mean, you never know, right? Like, I
think George is the exception. I think teams are going to learn that at some point, you know, that the way he was wired, what he prioritized, is, you know, there certainly are guys that can sell themselves on a circumstance.
Yeah.
But
it does feel like an outlier. I think that, I agree with you.
Yeah. And I wonder about how that's going to be. I'm sure some people look at the Toronto trade through that prism. And I think there is a chance that this goes well enough that he considers staying. I mean, there's certainly a much higher chance that they get a meeting now than they would have if they hadn't traded for him. That's for sure. So, yeah, I think that's all there. I also, like, kind of as we're thinking about stray thoughts in this, the reuniting of Kawhi and Rudy Gay, not exactly, I mean, the brightest time in Raptors franchise history. Trading Rudy Gay was actually what really kind of set them on the current path that they're on. That is interesting. And then one other kind of big picture point that I wanted to bring up here.
Wait, the reuniting of Kawhi and Rudy Gay?
Sorry, DeMar DeRozan and Rudy Gay. That's what I meant. Yeah, because on those kind of early Raptors teams before they really figured all this stuff out.
Yeah.
It's early. It's still in the morning. I barely slept. But so I was thinking last night, and I had this in the notes from when the reporting came out from Shams and from Woj about the long term, like the ripple effects that happen from DeMar DeRozan staying in Toronto back in 2016. I mean, DeRozan presumably considered the Lakers his hometown team. He from Compton considered them at that point. The Lakers had a ton of cap space. They could have made that deal happen. And this is a cold world. I mean, I feel sympathy for DeRozan. He chose to go back to Toronto. He wanted to make that, knowing that there was no obligation for them to reciprocate. He did not have, and I believe could not have gotten a no trade clause. And the Raptors, you know, they moved him for a deal that I think we both are very positive on for them. That sucks for DeRozan. He still has 2 or possibly 3 years under contract. But think about not only the impact on the Raptors of that. I mean, he was a principal in this Kawhi Leonard trade, but also for the Lakers. I mean, if you add him in, Waldang definitely doesn't happen. They probably don't overpay Timofey Mozgov as well, because maybe if he sends out those inklings, they just think about their space differently, think about the fits differently. And that affects a lot of things moving forward. I mean, what happens with LeBron? What happens with everything else? And so, I mean, you have this circumstance where a player chose in some ways chose a city and an immediate circumstance over, you know, everything else. And while the Raptors had a much better 2 seasons than he probably would have had with the Lakers, he ends up in a circumstance outside of his control.
Yeah, sorry, that was my alarm when I actually planned to wake up this morning. For Kawhi's situation, I think he did not get what he wanted here. You know, he probably would have wanted to go to Philly or LA. I think part of the reason that he did not, one is the health issue, but also just that he doesn't have an agent. And Woj was making this point earlier, but I'll second it on his podcast, that he doesn't have an agent and people around him that people feel are reliable. You know, that if it is actually said, hey, Kawhi wants to be here, all right, now we'll, based on that representation, we're going to throw more in to the deal. And by not having that, then it's really a lot harder to get what you wanted. If your value then becomes, well, the value of a 1-year rental, and the all you have to give up is the value of a 1-year rental, now the entire universe of the NBA becomes available. And that's how this trade happens with the Raptors, right? If you can actually manage the situation, have good communication both with the Spurs and with other teams, really make it seem credible, get the Lakers to really believe that you want to stay there, try to cajole them into throwing more into the deal so you can go there now. You know, so Kawhi, I mean, maybe there was no management strategy that could have gotten him what he wanted here, but it seems very clear that he did not. And so he will be obligated to report to the Raptors within a week under Section 10 of his contract. And unless he has a reasonable excuse not to do that, he'd be subject to discipline by the Raptors, or the Raptors could obviously void the trade and then he'd be right back where he was with the Spurs. So I mean, I think he will report. I think it really is in his best interest to play and play well this year. Is he going to do that, or is he going to malinger? Don't know. But I think it definitely is to his advantage to play well. And I'll just go back to the Sixers and Lakers again. I mean, if Kawhi Leonard plays really well this year, you're going to look, and maybe you won't, but you're going to look at this moment for the Sixers and Lakers and say, hey, you know what? They really should have thrown more into this, because the upside of making this move was so high. And, you know, even if the Lakers get into 2019 free agency and they could get Klay, they could get Jimmy Butler, like, that's not Kawhi Leonard. If Kawhi Leonard plays well, and he's younger than both of those guys too, Kawhi Leonard plays well, this was a mistake by the Lakers and Sixers to not throw more into the deal, as far as I'm concerned. But we don't know if he's going to play
well. I will also note that it is entirely possible that one or both of those options are still not on the table, depending on what the Raptors value. I mean, theoretically, if they kind of see, hey, Kawhi Leonard's playing well, but he's also not going to stay here. If I'm Philly, I throw more off on the table for the Raptors than I did for the Spurs.
Well, especially because it gets Kawhi off of the Raptors. But if the Raptors are playing well this year, I mean, they made this deal with the understanding that he very well could leave. And so they gave up that amount. And so, I mean, if they're looking at all like they can be contenders in the East, I would be very surprised if they were willing to do that, because this deal was made with that conception that, you know, it's about being really, really good this year. So I think, you know, the price would go up to get him from the Raptors versus from the Spurs.
Well, it probably isn't going down considering what the Spurs actually got for him. I mean,
all right. Anything else on this, or should we hit the rest of the news that we got?
No, I think we can move on. Actually, I think the most interesting piece of news that we can discuss is something that came out while we were recording this, which is from Woj, that Danny Ainge and Happy Walters, who is Marcus Smart's agent, are now seriously engaged in contract talks. And Woj lists the deal range as 4 years, 46 to 50 million. That can obviously mean a lot of different things depending on reporting, who's telling him and everything like that. But considering the long-term tax ramifications for the Celtics and the lack of leverage other than just signing the and leaving that Marcus Smart has, I'm interested in this.
Yeah, now this would give salary fodder for a trade once Smart is eligible to be traded on January 15th. If he signs this deal, he'll have signed with full bird rights, so wouldn't be eligible to be traded until January 15th. But whether it's next summer, whether it's at this trade deadline, he could be traded, and he's not an absolutely essential part of the team. This is one of those contracts that, you know, in a normal market is right on the borderline. Is Smart a starting point guard? He's got this great defensive versatility. He makes winning plays, but also the shooting, his overly thirsty attitude as well. Not only is a bad shooter, but he's probably a too frequent of a shooter. But, you know, maybe he's someone who could be a lower end starting point guard when you consider his great defensive versatility. I mean, he can really guard most threes in the NBA extremely well, and he's one of the best on ones and twos as well. Even some fours, he can guard pretty well. And, you know, this deal was basically at the $12 million a year range. You know, it's right on the borderline. It's kind of about right for Smart in a normal market with this cap, maybe a slight overpay. But just to keep him around, you know, they can use him for this year. It doesn't matter at all what you're paying him this year. There's no opportunity cost really this year.
Well, there's a little bit in terms of if they get up to the luxury tax, because if it starts the clock on the repeater.
Okay. I guess that's a good point. And, you know, they haven't used the mini mid-level either this year. But, you know, I think in terms of just, and there aren't many free agents that are left. Nobody as good as Marcus Smart, obviously. And then, of course, you have him as a potential trade chip on at least, you know, a decent contract, if not, you know, a huge value contract. He's not going to be like, oh, man, you got to give us something else to get off of this money in a deal, hopefully. So that seems about right and good for Smart, I think, to take this deal if available. You know, the thought was that he wanted a lot more. I think this would actually be a good piece of negotiating if we get there by his agent, Happy Walters, who you'll recall, of course, was the agent for Nerlens Noel last year, got him that offer for $70 million, which, you know, to hear everyone tell it, Nerlens was the one who decided to turn it down. But, you know, if you're a good agent, you can hopefully convince your client to take what is a good deal for him. Well, cue Dan Feldman, Danny.
Wait, we had a deal.
That's good. I was probably gonna be too lazy to actually play the drop.
that's why I decided to do it. I said to you, I actually still have the audio file. But yeah, I mean, so Nemanja Bjelica signed a 1 year contract for the room mid level with the Sixers, a deal we praised for the Sixers on the podcast. He has decided not to do that. He had a talked with John Krasinski of The Athletic about the kind of the uncertainty with his family and, you know, maybe having to move them after another 8 months. And so he looks like he's going to go play in Europe, where he will generate plenty of interest, of course, given his success there. And as an NBA first person, I'm very disappointed. I understand this if the offers are around the range that I think they might be for Bjelica, but I would have loved to have seen him on the Sixers.
Yeah, quite possible, especially because the European deals are paid out in a way that the numbers that are quoted are tax-free. So he's probably actually could make more in Europe. You know, he's basically, when you consider taxes, probably making, you know, in the $2.5 to $3 million range and on that $4.4 million room mid-level exception salary. So the Sixers now have that. And really a shame. I mean, you have to imagine that Bjelica will not be back now at age 30. I felt that he was totally wasted in Minnesota with all these other ball-dominant guys that he played with, some pretty unimaginative offense offensive coaches. I would have loved to have seen what he could have done more with the ball in his hands. I was really interested to see what he could do in Brett Brown's system. I thought he would have really helped them. And this kind of screws over the Sixers to some degree. We talked before about who the Raptors could get, but the Sixers definitely need a little one more shooter now at this point. They missed out on Wayne Ellington. They can only go 1 year, obviously, so they never really got a backup shooting guard. And now Bielitsa, as the Ilyasova replacement, is gone, so they're kind of right back where they were in the first part of the year before they got Ilyasova and Bellinelli. Not that they should have re-signed those guys with the contracts that they got, but you know, I think Pat Connaughton is someone that they might look at now. Maybe we'll see Jamal Crawford, room exception, come into play here as a shooting four. Not a ton of options really left on the market at this point. Maybe like Luke Babbitt is someone they could look at for like kind of an end of the bench sort of guy, but you know, he's probably way even worse defensively than Bielitsa and certainly way worse than Ilyasova. So I'm not sure where else the Sixers can go at this point, but you know, if Markel Fultz comes back and can play, then their backup shooting guard problems are alleviated to some degree. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely a problem, although I'm not sure even when he agreed that there was anyone else they would have been like hard on the heels of with that room exception.
And I wonder if the margin between the room exception and the non-tax pyramid level would have been enough to get Bielitsa to Utah, you know, like, because we had talked about how he would have been a wonderful fit for Jazz, but the same concerns probably would have been there. So I don't know if that money difference would have been enough. And I was kind of wondering, and I still wonder what Utah is doing with that. But if Bielitsa was, you know, unsure about this, then I guess that puts a little bit of color in the background of what could have been Utah's decision.
So we can turn now to a trade. Maybe not as interesting as the Kawhi trade. But Memphis,
maybe not,
trading Ben McLemore, Deonta Davis, and a 2021 second round pick to the Sacramento Kings for Garrett Temple, who you'll recall opted into that $8 million player option for this season. Temple will be in the mix maybe to start at the two for the Grizz, although Wayne Selden, I think, it might be better than him at this point, although Selden has struggled with injuries. And so the Grizz, with some limited resources, got Kyle Anderson and Garrett Temple, which is an okay-ish haul. They obviously lost Tyreke Evans, but and giving up only a second, they also had to throw in $1.5 million in cash. It looked like Deonta Davis might be out of their plans. They seem to like Ivan Rabb better, although I might like Davis a little bit better. But Davis is really disappointed. Hasn't shown the explosion like many a Grizzly has struggled with injuries in his first year. I don't think Davis really fits in very well in Sacramento either. That's part of why that $1.5 million was included to pay his salary. And the Kings already have a billion bigs. And McLemore, I think, again, is just kind of included here. The Kings aren't really going to use him either, you would think. So this is really just all about getting that 2021 second. But for me, Dan, I don't know if you agree. I don't really care for this trade for the Kings. I think that they would have been better off taking Temple as a guy who could play and trading him, trying to get maybe a first, even if it's only at the deadline, by taking on money that goes through 2020.
Maybe. I actually think that the 2021 second in this deal should not be undersold as a potential asset. That is around the time that Memphis could be pivoting and could end up being a pretty valuable asset as far as second round picks go. And we just haven't really seen the market for taking on, and I'm saying haven't seen meaning that we don't know, not meaning that we know it's bad, for taking on 2019-20 money, especially more in that ilk, because those teams are, you know, uniquely situated. Noah might end up getting stretched by the Knicks, you know, a couple of these other contracts, and that could change. Maybe teams get a clearer sense of where they are in everything over the next month or two. And Garrett Temple is a good player, you know, a player that I think can be a part of the rotation, but still has offensive limitations in terms of efficiency and competes on defense. And I like him as a player, but he's not going to like solve all your problems or anything like that. This also brings in the awkward return of Ben McLemore to the Sacramento Kings. And yet again, they have an overstuffed shooting guard rotation. Yeah. I don't think that's why
I'm treating Davis and McLemore as basically dead salary. And Davis,
as am I.
Davis really had to be included to help with Memphis's tax concerns. A trade would have worked if it were just McLemore for Temple on its own.
Yeah, it would have worked. And the Grizzlies are signing Javon Carter, so they were going to have a crunch in terms of roster spots anyway. And so this kind of allows them to resolve the situation. I think the Grizzlies are pretty dang close to done for this offseason. It clarifies a lot of that. And for Sacramento, you know, they actually have more space now. They have about $20 million because they cleared a little bit through this deal. So yeah, I understand what you're saying with that. I just think that might be a little bit nebulous, and they could still take on a bunch of salary there with everything else.
Well, let's look at it this way here, too, in terms of the value sure. proposition. You know, Jose Calderon, this is in 2016, when there is a much looser market for taking on bad salary. 2 seconds to go for $8 million. Now, the Bulls needed to move him to get Dwayne Wade at that time, so there's a little bit of pressure. But basically what this is you're giving away a guy who can play, who's probably, you know, close to fairly paid on that $8 million contract with the way Temple has played the last couple of years. That was a surprise, actually. I thought that was a horrible contract, though. Part of the reason we didn't like it is because he was being talked about as their backup point guard there, which never materialized. And then you're also taking on, so you're giving up a guy who can play, and you're also taking on $7 million in dead salary. And for 1 second rounder, you know, that's somewhat questionable value to me. I get that, you know, that's a pick that's very likely to be in the top 10 picks of the second round, which makes it look a little bit better there. But nonetheless, it's not a terrible deal for the Kings. I think, you know, Temple was probably their best asset in terms of a guy who is on a reasonable contract that could be exchanged for even worse money. And I would have hoped that you keep him around and maybe see if you can wrangle up a first rounder somewhere. But this may, and it's also pretty far away, that 2021 pick also. But maybe there wasn't really much of a deal to be made, and the Kings don't actually impact their cap space negatively here either because they sent out Temple's salary. So I don't know. Maybe, I'm not like killing this deal or anything. It's just, I'm not like overly impressed by the whole. But yeah, you're going to transition into something else.
I guess so.
Do you just like lose your train of thought sometimes? Like
what? No. I just I didn't have anything else to say on this trade.
Okay.
It generates a lot of apathy for me. well, so one thing I wanted to float by you was, I mean, we've talked about this idea of differing things that the Kings could do with this space. They have about $20 million now, and taking on long-term money is the best way to get a significant asset return. The Kings have so much space in 2019 that they could do it. Actually, I was thinking about this also because I wrote that piece for The Athletic. And another like thought I had on this was, theoretically, like we talked about the Cristiano Felicio for Melo framework and the limitations there. Was you could still do something involving Amon Shumpert and Melo. The idea there basically being that it's only 1 year of space as opposed to anything else. But the problem there is I don't know if OKC would be willing to give up the asset necessary to make that happen. Would you do that for an OKC future first round pick if you were Sacramento?
Well, so the first one, likely the first time it's
2021.
Traded, yeah, well, it'd have to be 2022 most likely because they got that 2020 outstanding still. So
That's right.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just because, like, what else are you doing with that space at this point this year? I mean, there's nobody else really who needs to dump money for this season. But yeah, maybe Temple, you know, could have been part of that as like a guy who could come in and help OKC, you know, going back in that Anthony deal to make the salary match, you know, and the Kings could have thrown in a little bit more salary there as well. Couple other things here. Should we slowly count to five in honor of Papa G's greatest NBA moment, the 5 second back down violation he got it as a rookie in summer league? Because he has been waived by the Blazers, had a 7/19 guarantee date, and he's going to go sign a deal in Greece now.
Yep, between him and Joffrey Laverne, two guys that I did not particularly enjoy watching play basketball, are now out of the NBA. I will deal with that. But we should talk about a guy that I do enjoy playing basketball. The second time this has happened, for those who remember in the last podcast we did, I talked about how Shabazz Napier signing that contract with the Brooklyn Nets of, you know, 2 years, probably around the minimum. We just still don't have exact terms on that I've seen, second year team option, that it was a poor reflection on the rest of the league because he was not as different from guys who made a lot more money, both in single year and multi-year contracts. They did the same damn thing again with Travion Graham. Travion Graham, certainly a far from a sure thing as a 3-and-D guy. I mean, with his tenure in Charlotte, but Brooklyn getting him likely at the minimum for 2 years, second year, you know, non-guaranteed, great piece of business for Brooklyn. And it makes me wonder, you know, like, oh, why is player X so much better than Travion Graham? I'm not saying he's certain, but a lot of these guys aren't. aren't. And so that's a great deal for the Nets.
Yeah, and again, I think there are teams that it's likely at the minimum that the Nets had a little bit more space than that. I don't think we've seen an actual number reported, although you can correct me if I'm wrong there.
I don't believe I've seen it for him or for Napier.
Yeah, and maybe then it was Napier who got more than the minimum if it was either of them. But nonetheless, you know, second year non-guarantee for Graham, that's pretty good. If they'd given him a team option instead, and then, you know, they could have made him a restricted free agent again next year, but probably better to just get him for that second year at the minimum, then he'll be unrestricted at the end of that. And I mean, they might have actually, if they really wanted to be creative and he would have agreed, done the non-guarantee and player option by doing the make him non-guaranteed this year, and but have the guarantee date be like one day after he signs the contract, so that then you could make him non-guaranteed and the team option next year in case he blows up, you can make him restricted. But again, very little chance of that. So probably better to just have him on that second year non-guarantee for the minimum. And yeah, I mean, this is, it just really surprised me. You know, I thought Travion Graham could get something along the lines of like, you know, a couple years for $3 million a year, and it was a surprise to me that he had so little interest. And I'm not saying he's like some great player or something like that. Like, he shot it well on very limited attempts. He plays hard, you know, not really skilled with the ball in his hands, but he's the type of clay that can maybe be molded into a valuable rotation piece, because there just aren't that many guys out there like him who show any kind of shooting potential and who play hard and have the ability to play defense on the wing. So I'm just, it's like, why someone wouldn't just, all right, you know, we'll pay this guy more than what he's shown so far in his career, but, you know, with the chance that he could work out. So I like this for Brooklyn, as I like the Napier contract.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not critical of the Glenn Robinson signing, but giving Glenn Robinson the money he
Travion
got,
Graham,
and then
was
James
better
Dennis
than Glenn Robinson last year. And Robinson is more explosive as an athlete, but I think Graham is better defensively than Robinson.
And it's the same thing that was true with James Ennis. Everybody talks about, and because it's damn true, about how wings are so valuable in the league, and yet for whatever reason, certain guys just fall through the cracks. And I haven't heard anything in terms of like a character issue or something like that that would lead to it. So yeah, I mean, it's frustrating in that sort of way, just because I think a lot of teams left a good player on the table for no good reason.
Yeah, and yet teams just take chances on guys who, you know, just don't have the potential to be modern players, to be playoff players. You know, Marco Bellinelli is getting 2 years at $6 million a year, and Ilyasova, who a player that we like, but not at the money that he got from the Bucks in this market. A couple of examples
And Indiana not getting a three defender when they could have gotten somebody for the minimum.
Where was Indiana on James Ennis with the money that they had available?
Yeah, they had to sign a second backup center. As much as we like Kyle O'Quinn, they had to sign a second backup center instead of going after somebody who could have been in their rotation.
Yeah, like the idea that you would want to have Kyle O'Quinn over James Ennis, like that Kyle O'Quinn would get more money on a one-year deal than James Ennis, is just really surprising me. And yeah, Ennis, you know, he may not be awesome, but he's shown the ability to be a quality 3-and-D player at times. I mean, so just, you know, take the chance on someone like that. They're so incredibly valuable in today's league. Is that it? Oh, Kendrick Perkins has been waived. Whew. All right, that's a good one to end on.
Well, actually, I'll end on something else that LeBron, another former LeBron teammate, when Nick DiPaolo reported this morning, kind of lost in the Kawhi stuff, justifiably, that Dwayne Wade signed a lifetime deal with Li Ning. And I have zero idea if this affects his willingness or anything to come back and play, but I just thought it was significant to mention, and so I wanted to put it in.
Yeah, maybe that does mean he would play one more year, depending on how much they're paying. They might, if he's got a minimum offer from the Heat, maybe Li Ning is going to really pay his salary this year. All right, we will be back on Monday next week, unless something crazy happens here. But this is the last crazy domino to drop here. Kawhi Leonard as a Raptor. I can't wait to see how this works out and how he looks. I mean, that's going to be the biggest thing. I'm just desperately curious to see here. We'll talk to y'all.
Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I'll mention I'm going to write a piece on this, of course, for The Athletic. I don't know what branch it will technically be under. Maybe The Athletic Toronto. Also, recording between now and when we record next, there will be a new Real Jam Radio. It's probably going to focus on Summer League, so you can check both those things out and getting back into writing. So follow me on Twitter. And, of course, Duncan LaRue on Patreon. We're going to have salary sheets. I believe they are already up for both teams in this trade, so you can check that out. And we will have our mailbag at some point in the next couple weeks. And this is, July is a great month to check out our Patreon.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. And there is one more thing that we should close with.
Wait, I thought we had a deal.